Support for this podcast and the following message come from Access and Opportunity, a podcast from Morgan Stanley. Women and entrepreneurs of color traditionally have a hard time accessing capital to start or grow their businesses. Join Vice Chairman Carla Harris as she introduces us to the dynamic investors, entrepreneurs, policymakers, and others working to close the funding gap for these entrepreneurs. Listen and subscribe to Access and Opportunity on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's show is presented by our friends over at Send In Blue. This is episode 347 of Jumbo Think.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Jumbo Think, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. Our guest on today's show is Michael McFaul. More about Michael in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you've never subscribed to Jumbo Think, now's the time to do it. Head on over to wherever you listen to podcasts, search for Jumbo Think, and click subscribe. It's even easier if you simply head on over to jumblethink.com. You'll find links to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. So head on over to wherever you listen to podcasts or jumblethink.com and subscribe to the show. Now let's join today's conversation. Hey there, friends. Welcome to Jumbo Think. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have a really great conversation with Michael McFaul lined up for you today on the show. He is the co-CEO of Big B Coffee. More about him in a moment. Before we dive into that, we want to thank our friends over at Send In Blue for sponsoring today's show. Send In Blue is your all-in-one digital marketing platform offering tools for email campaigns, Facebook ads, chat, marketing automation, and more. Best of all, they are offering 1 month free of their premium plan to the first 100 Jumbo Think listeners who sign up. Head on over to sendinblue.com/jumblethink. That's sendinblue.com/jumblethink and use the code jumblethink to get your first month free. Now, I mentioned today's guest. Super excited to have him on. His name is Michael McFaul. He's the co-CEO of Big B Coffee, which is the U.S.'s third largest coffee franchise. He's also the author of Inc. original book, Grind. It's a really cool book, and it talks about the philosophy of and creating a culture of love within the workplace. We learn about his story and how he started out as a barista and ended up in the world of business. We talk about and entrepreneurship and how we teach entrepreneurship. It's an all-around great conversation. So let's go ahead and join the conversation we had with today's guest, Michael McFaul. We are here with Mike McFaul. I am super excited about this conversation. Thanks so much for taking time out of your day. I know you're super busy.
Well, no, it's great. I love to do this. I'm glad to be here. This is fantastic.
I've been really fascinated from day one when we got the, hey, would you like to have Mike on your show email? I read through, and a lot of times when I read them, I'm just like, eh, you know, and then there are times where I get excited. Yours was one where I read it and I'm like, this is awesome. Even though I don't drink coffee, this is awesome.
don't tell anybody that.
Here's my problem with coffee. I love the smell. So I love being in coffee shops. I love being around coffee. I even like brewing it. I have a roaster, a small little home roaster. I use it mostly for roasting chocolate, but I love the smell. So I'll even like throw some extra beans that I have in there just to roast it because I think the smell is awesome, but the taste doesn't do much for me.
Got it. I can convert you, I promise.
Okay. Well, I'm going to come to Michigan. I have friends that live out your way. I'm going to come to your shop and I want you to make me coffee and be like, this will make you a believer.
Yep, I'll do it. I'll meet you there.
Okay. So you are the co-CEO of Big B Coffee. What is a co-CEO? I've seen very few companies actually have that.
Right. And it's something that people are fascinated by. And my partner and I don't find it exceptional at all. We're 50-50 partners in the business. So we have only exact same number of shares. And, you know, he and I have made the exact same dollar amount down to the penny for the last 24 years.
Wow.
And so, you know, we for many years, he was the CEO. I was the president. About 7 years ago, we switched that and just went with co-CEO because that was really the role we were playing. I mean, as 50-50 partners, it's nobody really answers to anybody, and it's a beautiful relationship, right? And I advocate it. I advocate 50-50 partnerships because it keeps everybody honest. Mm-hmm. And so, but we are, I like to say that it's like a marriage. I mean, it's complicated. You deal with a lot of things that marriages deal with, like money and so on. And so, the dynamic between the two of us is, there's deep respect. We're very different. So we have very different skills in many ways, the dynamic over the years was that we each had a role, and we were like vice president in that role.
Wow.
And then we answered to each other.
Okay. Like
we answered so in his role, he was the vice president of operations and marketing per se. He didn't have that title, but then that's how we thought about it. And then he answered to sort of the two of us ish as, the owners of the company or the CEO. So, the co-CEO thing is unusual. Most people say it can't work. But we've got great history together and it's working really well for us. I love it because frankly, as a CEO, I think it can get real lonely, if you're an individual.
Yeah.
And I've got somebody who's got my back no matter what. And I know that, I can lean on him. I lean on him all the time. He leans on me. And it's actually really nice.
I had a business coach for years, British guy, so it always sounded cooler when he said it. But he would always say, only kings and queens know what kings and queens know. And what he was talking about is that if you're a CEO of a company, or if you are an entrepreneur or a creative of any type, unless you're in with your peer group, it's a very lonely place because you're making decisions, you're doing things that other people don't understand. And so that's got to be almost like a little bit of a superpower to have somebody in your corner that you're collaborating with, that you're partnering with, that can understand and really process from the same point of view as you are to lead a business together.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the great stories, we were going to do this press conference and we're walking down this hallway to go into this room at this hotel where there's the press is assembled. I don't know. There's probably 30 or 40 members of the press there. And we're walking down the hallway and he looks at me and he says, Mike, I don't have it. This one's on you.
So no pressure.
Right. If I wasn't there, right. Imagine he's walking down that hallway. He didn't feel very good. I think he was, I think he was probably getting sick. And so that's the kind of thing that happens in our relationship. And, I've done that to him over the years too, yeah. In different ways and so on. And so, yeah, it's really nice.
Now, Big B, as I understand it, is one of the fastest growing coffee franchises in the country. It is one of the most profitable when it comes to per store capital, when it comes to money generated by the store. How does a guy get into the world of coffee and build a coffee company that's doing so much when it's not like you were in the food industry and you said, oh, this is a cool idea. Let's go start a coffee chain. Or, so many of the businesses that are franchised now usually – historically, although this is changing, have started from a VC fund or something like that saying, hey, we're going to start 10 stores and we're going to do this. And it seems like there's a shift in that. Five Guys is an example and there's some others, but that's not the normal. So how does a guy get into coffee, start a coffee company and end up franchising and growing so quickly?
Well, I never intended to be in the coffee business, and I was a barista in our very first store.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, yeah. And I worked for my partner in that first store. We had one store at that point. And, this is going to sound horribly corny and I apologize. I'm in the coffee business today because I loved being a barista.
Oh, wow.
And I'd show up to work in the morning and I'd put the apron on and I would go out, and it was so energizing to engage people first thing in the morning and know that you were having this amazingly positive impact on them first thing in the morning, sending them on their way in the morning to go about their day. And I love that. And so when my partner approached me about becoming a manager in the business, I was on my way to graduate school. That's
wow.
That's what I was doing. I was,
okay.
I was at a research position at Michigan State University, and I was on my way back to graduate school. And when he approached me about becoming a manager, I was like, no, I've got this whole other thing I'm doing, and I'm not going to derail that to become the assistant manager of a coffee shop. and so we ended up going for this walk, and the walk's now infamous. And we basically took 3 hours in one spring afternoon and walked around and talked.
Wow.
At the end of that, it sounds like a fairy tale, but at the end of that, we shook hands and we agreed that we would form a new business together, that we would be equal partners in, that we would use to grow the concept. We had no idea what that meant or what it was going to look like. And the next morning, I walked to the university. I went to the professor I was working for. I resigned, and I went full-time into the coffee business. But the fundamental was I love going to work.
And I
love showing up. And I've always said, you know, I look forward to the day where I can go back and be a barista. And, you know, not that I don't enjoy my days today, but there's just something magical about being in a store and taking care of the customer. And, you know, there's certain people that are sort of prone to hospitality who love that. And I was one of those people, and I really enjoyed it.
I find that really fascinating because I know people who have been baristas, and I know both sides where people are like, oh, I have to get up early. It's just a nightmare. And I've known other people that they love every aspect of it. They love the people. They love what they're creating. And so for me, I can really understand from the others that I've talked to that have been in that space how they can have an affinity towards that and a real love for it. But you make this decision. There had to be some people, maybe your parents or maybe others, who looked at you and said, what are you doing?
So, I come from a relatively privileged background, right? Upper middle class kid. You know, my parents put me through college and so on. And, you know, my parents, they were so supportive. They never said a word. They had put me through private school here in Michigan. It was cost a fortune. Like, you know, I think back on how much that cost. And I'm like, did you guys really do that? Like, that's crazy. Wow. You know, anyway. And I went through a great school and I got a great education and I had everything going for me. I really did. And then I end up taking the job as an assistant manager in a coffee shop on a handshake with a guy that we're going to build a company together.
Wow.
And they were great. I mean, I can't say it enough. I talk about it and I'm amazed at how supportive they were. I remember there's one story, a friend of mine, I don't know if you remember a company called CA Associates. It was a software company.
Yeah.
And he worked there, and he was probably 25 or 26 at the time. And so was I. And I was the assistant manager of a coffee shop, and he was telling me his stock options were worth like $2.8 million at 25 years old. Right.
Wow.
And I was, you know, but, you know, we look at it today and that company didn't work out. And my company's absolutely awesome.
I'm going to take a little side note here. I love the branding of Big B. I think it's really sharp. It's very well done. Black and orange on the cap there. When are you opening up in Baltimore, Maryland? I know you're in Baltimore, Michigan, but I mean, Baltimore, yeah. Orioles, you got to get like some love there. There should be a franchise right in the ball field.
I love Baltimore. We're a franchise company. So we go where people want to take us.
Okay.
Frankly. And so, you know, we have a store opening in New Jersey shortly. We have a store opening in Arizona near Phoenix shortly. I just found out today that somebody's, it looks like we're going to be doing a deal in Utah. But, you know, so when somebody in Baltimore approaches us about building a store in Baltimore, that's when we'll be going to Baltimore.
I'll see what I can do. I'll pull in some favors, see if I can get someone on board for that. You tell an interesting story. There's this story you tell about your dad, and you tell this story about shoveling snow so you can rake the leaves so that you can go play hockey, and how this was a sign of love. And this is going somewhere in a moment, but tell us about that story, because that seems like, to me, punishment. I grew up in the Northeast. I know what snow's like. I know what raking leaves are like, which I don't mind raking leaves, but
you put them together, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's like, why don't we just get a scraper and scrape the grass off while we're at it too?
Well, you know what? So I tell that story because I am really developing a whole bunch of content around love in the workplace.
Yeah.
And the importance of love in the workplace. And I tell that story because, you know, love is what I talk about is that there's different kinds of love. And there's the kind of love where you are engaged with somebody and you are working with them, and you, like my dad there that day was showing extraordinary love for me by making me go out and live up to the commitment I made.
Yeah.
And the commitment I had made was, is I would rake the leaves before I could play hockey on Saturday.
Yeah.
And so I woke up, I put it off all week long, and I woke up Saturday morning and there's 4 inches of snow on the ground. And of course I think my dad's going to let me off the hook. And he's like, nope. So here I am, my parents' front yard wasn't tiny. And so, you know, I get out there and so I had to shovel all the snow off first.
Wow.
Right. And then I had to rake the yard.
Yeah.
And so, but I look at that as an extraordinary demonstration of love.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing that we should all be doing for each other.
Yeah.
In work environments and when we're supporting each other, it's what managers should be doing for the people they manage and so on. And so, yeah, it was an extraordinary, extreme moment for me.
I bring up that story because in everything that you say on your branding, on your site, there's this concept of love. It's Big B exists to love people. You mentioned that you, I think it was Bob Fish, started Big B to begin with, then you come in and partner. Was that DNA there with Bob? Was that something that you brought in collectively and collaboratively? How did that concept really come to the forefront? Like, yes, we make coffee, but it's to help people make their day better. It's help people wake up well. It's whatever those things are. And then it goes further. It's not just your customers. It's to love your teams, to love your franchise owners, to love the people around you. How did that come to be? Why is that in your DNA?
Well, so, you know, you've got to look at our business model too, which is we're a franchise company. Mm-hmm. And so what we do as a business is we support people in building profitable businesses, profitable coffee shops, and to build an asset that can support them and their family. And the idea there is that asset supports them in building the life that they love. And so our business model is very much about coaching and supporting. And, you know, sometimes those conversations aren't easy. Sometimes the conversations are like the conversation my dad had to have with me on that Saturday morning about going out and shoveling the snow. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but yeah, it's very much in our DNA. I think Bob and I are both teachers. I think we're both educators ish, you know, and so, we love the business model, but part of being a teacher, part of being a mentor is caring enough about somebody to really put in the effort and really put in the energy to support them. And so that's what we talk about when we talk about love. And yeah.
You mentioned that you're franchise forward and that's how locations get started. That's how you grow what you do. With that, there's a level of trust that you are bestowing onto someone that's come into the family of Big B. They represent you at that local level. They represent you to anyone who walks that door, whether it's a traveler, whether it's a person that lives in that community. How do you make sure that that DNA translates to every owner and franchise owner? I think of McDonald's as a great example. Over the last several years, there are McDonald's that we don't go to because they're poorly ran. Their staff doesn't communicate well. The orders are always wrong. There are other McDonald's that we'll go to and grab a breakfast sandwich or something like that if we're out and about on a Saturday morning or something like that. And there's not that consistency of ownership that you can tell, hey, whoever owns this franchise, whether it's a firm or whether it's an individual. And I think this is probably something, you know, Chick-fil-A is very true to this, where they don't like having franchise owners that own multiple locations. They want that person invested there. So how do you keep that DNA, which is so entrenched in the core of who you guys are as a company? How do you keep that pure? How do you keep that right? How do you filter those owners?
Well, this might be a counterintuitive answer, but what I believe, and I think what we've learned over the years, is that we're not always right.
Mm.
And we support the owner as best we can in how we know. Right. And listening though is really important to them and what their needs are in order to take care of them. And so like there's this concept in franchising about losing control. And a lot of entrepreneurs don't want to choose the franchise model because they lose, quote, control.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm here to tell you, you never had control in the first place.
Very right? good point. Yes.
And so it's just a different kind of model. But I'll tell you what, who I want on my team is I want the entrepreneur. I yeah. want the person who is embedded in the community. They've you know, to open a franchise, you have had to have done something in your life pretty extraordinary to have the resources to be able to go into business for yourself. That's the person I want on my team. And you know, nothing against company-owned stores, but I'll take that situation over a store I own in some city 2 hours from here, where I've got an employee who, you know, is young and relatively inexperienced in there running that store. I'll take that entrepreneur 10 out of 10 times.
Wow.
And I had a conversation this morning with a woman, and I know the woman that runs our operations is going to string me up on my toes when she hears this, and I'm going to tell her I did it. But this woman wants to close this coming Sunday.
Wow.
to retrain her staff. And she's going to bring in 3 or 4 new staff, and because she's really struggling with the staffing. So she's going to close on Sunday. Well, our people told her no.
Wow.
Right. Told her, no, you can't do that. It's against the rules.
Wow.
And so this woman called me, and I'm really close to her, and yeah, they're great people, right? They're up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, which you want to talk about that. That's the tundra up there.
Yeah.
And so she called me, and I said, Carol, just close. It's the right thing to do, right? Yeah. Just close, you know, yeah. And you're going to get some kind of a letter from us that says you're out of compliance on this, but take the letter, throw it in the trash and move on, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the way Bob and I have always approached our owners. Like, we've got a great deal of respect for them. I mean, this woman is just, she's incredible, right? I mean, they run a hell of a store. They've done a great job for, gosh, it gotta be going on a decade now.
Wow.
And so that's, I don't think the mentality of control is the right mentality. What I want to do is I want to support this woman, Carol, in developing her business and being everything I can be to support her so she can be successful.
Yeah.
It's a different mentality. And I think you got to have that mentality in franchising to be successful, or you're going to suffer.
Yeah. It, to me, when I hear you talk about this, whether it's in our conversation here, whether it's in the articles I've read on your site, whether it's other things I've seen you talk about, you know, there's this model of mission-driven business. And a lot of times it comes around specific social things or specific environmental things, or there's a mission there. I think that when I see what you're doing and I look at the fruit of what you've done, it is a mission of love. And it says all of these other things matter because you matter.
Yeah. That. So we are on our mission, and I don't know how much you've gotten into this, but or if you've read about it, but our mission, I'm sorry, it's not our mission. Our vision is to improve workplace culture in America.
Yeah.
So, and how we're going to do that is by supporting people and building lives that they love.
Yeah.
And what we want to do with our organization is demonstrate that you can be a deliberately developmental organization, which means when someone comes to work for you, you are invested in them as a human being and helping support them and developing them. And in the end, that might mean that they decide in pursuing their passions to go do something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're okay with that,
yeah.
Right? Many, many business owners, managers flip out over that concept, right? Like, oh my gosh, I mean, you're going to support them for 4 or 5 years, you're going to train them, and then they're going to walk out the door and you're going to be okay with that? It's like, absolutely,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm going to give them a high five and wish them luck.
Yeah.
And it's a different mentality in that what I know, in my argument back to any CEO that wants to argue with me is, but imagine the power of the people that stick around and decide that Big B Coffee is their passion.
Yeah.
Now we've got superhuman people working for us,
yeah.
Right? We have superheroes working for us because they've decided this is their life.
Yeah.
And they've chosen that, right?
Yeah.
And they knew if they wanted to go do something else that we would support them. And we've done it. I mean, we've done it a number of times, right? And so that's our concept. And I want the workplace to become a petri dish for self-improvement.
Yeah.
And I want to come up with all kinds of models. We've got a bunch of them, but all kinds of models and tools and things that you can deploy in your organization that you can work with people inside of that petri dish for their own benefit, for their own improvement, for their own, and help them pursue the life that they've always dreamt. Yeah. So that's what we're really up to. Like at our core, that's what we're up to. And then our whole business model supports that. And, you know, the product we serve supports that. And it's just beautiful.
Love that. As we wrap up this first segment, we always ask three questions. The first one being, how do you find purpose in what you do?
My love of people.
Yeah. And that really shines through. I think it does. What's the one big challenge you're working to overcome?
Me? Being a better communicator with my wife.
Mm. And then finally, what's the next big dream, idea, or goal that you have?
How crazy you want to get?
As crazy as you want to go, go for it.
I want to buy my dad a boat.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm in the middle of right now. And that's going to be a beautiful boat. And he can spend the next 10, 15 years on it.
Yeah, I'd like to be at a place where I can buy my dad a vintage T-Bird. That's like his loving. That's the car he loves. So, yeah. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Mike's book, Grind. We're going to talk more about Big B, and we're going to talk about a lot of fun stuff. So we'll be right back in a moment. Hey there, friends, it's Mike, and over the last few weeks, I've been telling you about this really cool tool called SendinBlue that we've been using for our email newsletters. I want to give you a little bit of an update on our experience and some of the things that I've been super impressed about with their platform. If you build email newsletters at all, you know that one of the most difficult things to do is to build email templates that really reflect your brand. The tools are just clumsy and difficult and really hard to use. That's why I've been super impressed with my experience using SendinBlue. They have three tools that you can use to build out those email campaigns. They have a drag and drop builder, which is really easy to use. You just take the element you want. Maybe it's an image or some text, or you want some blocks for content. You just drag it over and then you design around it using their click and edit tools. Really easy to use. They also have a rich text editor. And for those techie people out there, you can get down and dirty into the code and really build out templates exactly how you want. Now, building email templates is critical to getting campaigns that work for your brand. So when I found that their tools were easy to use, I wanted to let you know. I hope you'll take some time and check them out. Best of all, for the first 100 JumbleThink listeners who sign up, they want to give your first month free on their premium plan. So head on over to sendinblue.com/jumblethink. That's sendinblue.com/jumblethink and use the code jumblethink to get your first month free.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Access and Opportunity, a podcast from Morgan Stanley. Women and entrepreneurs of color traditionally have a hard time accessing capital to start or grow their businesses. Join Vice Chairman Carla Harris as she introduces us to the dynamic investors, entrepreneurs, policymakers, and others working to close the funding gap for these entrepreneurs. Listen and subscribe to Access and Opportunity on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Access and Opportunity, a podcast from Morgan Stanley. Women and entrepreneurs of color traditionally have a hard time accessing capital to start or grow their businesses. Join Vice Chairman Carla Harris as she introduces us to the dynamic investors, entrepreneurs, policymakers, and others working to close the funding gap for these entrepreneurs. Listen and subscribe to Access and Opportunity on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now let's return to the conversation we had with today's guest, Mike McFaul. We are back with Mike McFaul. Before we dive into the conversation, you have a lot of stuff going on. There's the book, there's Big Big Coffee, there is just a lot that you're doing. What are the best ways for people to find and connect with the things that you find important?
Well, I think, you know, the website, grindthebook.com, is where a lot of my stuff is a lot of my current work is placed. But, you know, the LinkedIn is a great place to connect. I've been having some amazing conversations on LinkedIn in the last couple of months. And so I think that's a great place to connect with me. And then of course through Bigby, but that's a little more awkward because it would go through other people to get to me. But you know, LinkedIn is really probably the best place at this point.
And we'll put those links in the episode notes. So wherever you are listening right now, probably down below somewhere, click them. They'll take you magically to wherever you need to go. So they'll be right there. I mentioned before the break that you have a book. It's a year old roughly now. It is called Grind. What's it about?
It is focused on business startup.
Okay.
And we, you know, I've done an enormous amount of reading in the business startup and entrepreneurial space. And I've always been disappointed in the books that I read because I don't think they capture the essence of what that moment is like, what startup is like.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's either, you know, people flying in the private jets with nine-figure net worths looking back at startup through rose-colored glasses, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And those are entertaining stories, but you don't get a lot out of them.
Yeah.
And then the other segment is really it's academics studying entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to write a book that really captured the essence of being an entrepreneur. And I was with a group yesterday speaking, and a woman had read my book, and she said, you know, it's almost like you're encouraging people not to become entrepreneurs. And I'm like, no, it's not that. I just want people to go into it with the right expectation.
Right, right.
And so that's really what the book is about. And the first chapter to me is probably the most interesting work of the book, which is entrepreneurs always spend time doing due diligence on the business. Mm-hmm. So they spend a ton of time on studying a marketplace or studying pricing or competition or, you know, real estate costs or, you know, whatever it might be. And what I've never heard anybody talk about is how important it is for the entrepreneur to do due diligence on themselves.
Yeah.
And you are the most important ingredient to your new business. Mm-hmm. And do you understand what your strengths, what your weaknesses are, how you're going to get in your own way? We all get in our own way constantly, right? And so let's spend time on that before you ever decide, you know, what market to go into or what product to develop and so on. So that to me, it's one of the novel parts of the book because I've never seen anybody else talk about that.
The book itself is an authentic look at entrepreneurship. And the problem I have with entrepreneurship as an entrepreneur myself, I don't think we're having honest conversations overall as a culture about it. And that's really a damaging thing. Entrepreneurship's on a decline right now. It shouldn't be that way here in the country. Now, there could be things we could discuss about, like compliance issues or legislation that is not small business friendly or entrepreneurial friendly. Yes, those things do exist. However, we need more entrepreneurs. We need to foster this. And to do that, I think we have to have those honest conversations about what it takes. You mentioned there about taking a self-assessment as kind of the cornerstone of, yeah, you can understand markets, you can understand business fundamentals, you can understand all of that. But if you don't start with yourself, you really aren't set enough for success. So what are some ways people can do that?
I say there's one deal breaker and only one, right? And that deal breaker to me is that if you don't consider yourself naturally a salesperson, I think you're going to struggle.
What do you mean by that? Like, I know a lot of people listening are going to be thinking salesperson. Now, are you talking like the guy that I go down to Jimmy's used cars and like the slimy, you know, guy that you're button down shirt, big old hair, he's going to sell you anything he can. And, you know, the oil and snake skin guy, you know?
Yeah. If he sells a lot of cars. Yeah. I'm talking about that guy.
Oh, okay.
Right? So you know, I mean, there is this derogatory sense out there about salespeople, and it's like you just said it. I mean, that's what people think, right? If we don't have competent salespeople, we don't have businesses.
Yeah.
There's a guy by the name of Amir Bide. He was at Harvard at the time. I think he's at University of Chicago now, who wrote a book called The Economics of New Business.
Okay.
It's not a pleasant read. It's a great read, but it's not a pleasant read because it's fairly academic.
Yeah.
But he studied the Inc. 500 fastest growing companies over 20 years. And he studied all the data on that list, all the companies, all the data. And this book he published is extraordinary. 80% of the CEOs of the Inc. 500 fastest growing companies said they were the only or primary salesperson at startup.
Wow.
Yep. Mind blown.
Are these people who were the founders and then the CEOs, or because I know a lot of larger companies.
Yeah. It could, right. There could be some people that were salespeople and then became the CEOs.
Yeah.
Right. But the CEO mentality.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to make a judgment here, but to me, the CEO mentality is a development mentality. It's a sales mentality, right? And you oftentimes find that, let's say, your technical people step aside. Technical founders will step aside, and they'll bring in a CEO who is development oriented. And development oriented is a sophisticated way of saying a salesperson.
Yeah.
Right. And so to me, that's the one deal breaker. But then, you know, there's a bunch of other nuggets in there. And I'm coming out with, I don't know where we are exactly in the project, but I'm coming out with what's going to be called the grind score. Uh-huh. And it's going to be a tool. You can go in and answer 24 questions, and it'll rate you 0 out of 100 in terms of your capability of being an entrepreneur. Now, totally bold, right? Probably a little irresponsible to do that. And you know, I hope everybody takes it with a grain of salt, but it's really fun. It's a fun project, and I look forward to people taking it and then like sending me, you know, angry emails or whatever, you know, because it, so, but you know, the mindset of an entrepreneur is pure optimism.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta be, right? Like, you know, you gotta wake up in the morning and you gotta believe this thing's gonna work, or you're going down hard. Yeah. It's always about development. It's always about sales. It's always about moving forward. The other thing is, it's always about getting better.
Yeah.
It's always about improving and getting better. And if you think that your product is good enough, you're probably in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, you need to always be making improvements to your product and bringing more value to the customer.
Coming back to Bigby a little bit with what you're saying here, I feel like when you say you've got to be a salesperson first, part of that is getting people on your team to buy in.
I think
so often we think sales is external, like out, money, money, money. But if people weren't buying into the culture of what you're creating at Bigby with this concept of work, love in the workplace, of really loving your job, loving the people around you, loving others well, if they didn't buy into that, if you didn't sell that culture to them, then the culture of Bigby would go away and it would just be another coffee shop.
Well, I'll just tell you one quick story about that, because I believe what you just said 100%. We're selling in everything we do.
Yeah.
Right. And so we had worked with a woman who ran Subway Sandwich Shops, their development team. She was the chief development officer there, from 700 units to 27,000 units.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
And she then moved on to manage Fred DeLuca's private equity group.
Yeah.
And then that's how I got to know her, because she was trying to buy us. And so we negotiated with her for over 10 years.
Wow. Right?
When Fred died, she moved on. She decided to leave and start her own company as a consultant. She worked with us a little bit on some projects. And then I said one day to my partner, I said, "You don't think Lisa would be interested in coming to work for us and run our development department, do you? You know, like, that's a crazy idea." And doesn't hurt to call. So I'll never forget. I called her up and I said, "Lisa, I got this crazy idea. Would you be interested in joining our team as our development officer?" And it's the greatest single professional compliment I think I've ever gotten, when she said yes.
Wow. That's really cool.
And then she, at the end, it was funny because we had that conversation. We didn't talk compensation. We didn't talk anything. She just said yes. And then at the end of the call, she said, "Well, I probably should talk to Tony first," which is her husband. So anyway, but I'll tell you, that was, to me, like, when somebody you respect so deeply is willing to come onto your team, it's like the greatest compliment in the world.
We mentioned about looking at yourself as a starting place as an entrepreneur. What are the other pitfalls that I think, or you think, and you cover in the book, really hang people up that they should have known going into it, but we just don't talk about enough?
Well, I think a lot of companies struggle because the partners don't have the genuine conversation in advance of becoming partners.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, there's all kinds of things you got to talk about. And before, you know, let's say you're going to put your founding team together and you're going to be co-founders. I mean, you got to have the real conversations. And I've seen this go sideways many, many times in my history, where, you know, people will come together. I remember these two guys, they came together and they built one of our stores, and, you know, these guys were amazing, and we were super excited about them. What we didn't know was their wives hated each other.
Wow.
Well, how do you possibly start a business with that understanding, right? And think it's going to work out. I mean, so that's one of the things that I see out there is that, and then the other thing I see, and I've seen it with intimate, like close family members, and people I know well, is people are scared to sell. They're scared to go all in.
Yeah.
And because if you go all in and you are giving it everything you have, it doesn't work, then that's on you. Right. Wow.
Yeah.
And so I see that, and I don't understand it. Here you just invested, you know, some significant majority of your life savings into a business, and then you kind of show up. Like, that's insanity. I remember there's a great story. There's a woman here in Ann Arbor who is a serial entrepreneur. I think she's had four or five exits, and she said on her first company, she was embarrassed to tell her husband how hard she was working.
Wow.
Right. She said she was. And to me, that statement right there is what made her successful, because yeah. She was working so hard. She was embarrassed to even tell her husband how hard she was working.
Wow. Wow. That's
Isn't
crazy.
That amazing?
Yeah, that's amazing. I think of, you know, one of the things here that you talk about is a self-sustaining business in the mm-hmm. book. And I think a lot of people. I hear this often from business owners. Oh, if I wasn't there, the business wouldn't operate. I have this team, but they need me there, you know. And I think one of the greatest compliments of a business owner can be, hey, I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks. Don't call me. And they're going to know that. And they know that they can step away and do that. Why is it that business owners are so afraid of building a business that doesn't need them?
Because everybody's insecure and needs to be needed.
So you don't think you think it's that insecurity?
Yeah. Well, it's a piece of it. So, I mean, I've got real strong opinions on this. I mean, I know a fair amount of CEOs, right, of large yeah. companies and so on. And they go away on vacation and they don't unplug. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what you're communicating when you're sitting on a beach in Florida, pounding away on your phone, but you don't trust your team.
Yeah.
You're telling your team, I don't trust you. I need to be involved. I don't trust the decisions you're making, and I need to know everything that's happening. And so, and then the second piece of that is what I said earlier, which a second ago, which is we need to feel needed.
Yeah.
I don't have that much to do in my business day to day anymore. Right. Yeah. I mean, I've got an unbelievable team, like Lisa. You know, I mean, this woman knows 10 times, 100 times more than I know about the development of a franchise company.
Yeah.
But like they need to be needed, or they feel like they don't have worth. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it is. But you'll never grow. I've got a friend of mine that owns a massive company. Not massive is probably a little too strong of a word. It's a good sized company, but I'm like, you're stagnating your team. Cause yeah. you're controlling everything that's going on, and that you can't do that forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting. We grew our team pretty well when we were in Northern California. For a web development team, we had 14 full-time, we had part-timers and contractors and a pretty big shop for, the space that we're in. And I remember one day, some of my employees say, we don't feel like you're as engaged in the business, the daily operation. I'm like, why do I need to be? I'm right. Like, you're doing your jobs, everything's working. I said, my job is, and the part that I do that none of you can do really well, is jumping on a phone call with a client and getting them to understand the value we bring, and then having a team that can reinforce it. That's why I'm here. And then to come in and say, what are you guys doing? I don't need to know every nut and bolt and every piece that's going on when it comes to a development of a website. You know, yeah, we're working on a big company project for a Fortune 100 company. That doesn't mean I need to know that there's a small little glitch here. You know, I don't need to hold your hand. And it was just that realization that for me, I took that as a compliment, like for our team to be like, oh, we want you around. Well, that's a good thing. Sure. But on the flip side, like, them not realizing how much control that they had, that was sad for me to be like, look, I don't need to be sitting at my desk and accessible to you 24/7 because you guys can do it. You guys are doing it.
I think one of the great compliments is when your people do it better than you ever could have.
Yes. We always talk about purpose and passion. And what we do, it's an episode, or in the first part of the episode, you know, I talk, how do you find purpose in what you do? And I know for you, you exist to love people is what you say in your branding. There are a lot of people in entrepreneurship that have this belief that I'm just going to go start things to make money, and they don't have a passion or a purpose behind it. That drives me nuts. How important do you feel for new entrepreneurs that they're passionate about the thing that they're working on or in?
I think to be fulfilled, you have to have the passion.
Okay.
So you, and that's, I mean, that's a tall statement, but I guess there are people out there that truly love the, and are passionate about the processes of running a business.
Right.
And so maybe for that person, the product they sell doesn't really matter. And so I accept that. I do at face value. But I know for me, there's a moment, and it was probably 2013, 2014, where we were making money, and it just that just wasn't enough. And we were starting to lose interest. Bob and I were.
Wow.
We were, yeah. And we recognized it. It was like, damn, sort of, and that's, there's this fairy tale story that you won't believe if I tell you, but I met a shaman. He's not really a shaman, okay. But he's called a shaman in the woods. And I met him around a campfire on an island in northern Michigan. And
he, on purpose or by accident?
By accident.
Okay.
And so he was studying and working on a concept called conscious capitalism.
Okay.
And he brought that into our world. And all of a sudden, that's what started driving the conversation around purpose. Wow. Right. And we worked for years. I mean, we worked for 3 years to get all of that codified. And now today I wake up in the morning and I absolutely love what I do there. Yeah. I love what I do. And so, you know, had I, and by the way, the business is growing like crazy, mm-hmm. right? And by walking into my purpose, and then it's made the whole thing more dynamic and more powerful.
So when you say you stagnated, do you feel like it was both emotionally, physically involved in the business and the business stagnated? Like, do you think that there was a correlation to that? Like, when I kind of became indifferent to this, the business also didn't thrive as much as it is now. And that finding that purpose and bringing it back into the DNA really was the thing that sparked all this growth.
You know, did it stagnate? It's hard to say it stagnated because we've grown pretty rapidly. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
But the business didn't stagnate from a revenue growth perspective. What stagnated was our passion to improve and get better.
Okay.
And our commitment to the, you know, making the company everything that we wanted to make it. It was like, it hadn't stagnated yet, but it was going to.
Wow.
Is what I would say. And okay. I believe that had we not done what we did, then I do believe it would have stagnated. And, you know, it would have stagnated in a pretty good place. You know, I would have had a nice income for my life, and it would have been fine. But it would not have, I wouldn't have been waking up every morning super passionate about coming in and having conversations with you and talking about it.
Yeah,
and
so
on. Yeah.
Well, I love what you're doing. I love the DNA of Big B Coffee. I can't wait till there's some on the East Coast. I can't wait till I can stop in and you can convince me that coffee's yummy. I'm grateful that you took the time to write a book about entrepreneurship. You know, as we wrap up this segment, there's success that you've built around the coffee, around the book, about you have some really cool grind episodes, little videos that you're doing that are really fun and helpful. When you think about all that you're creating, do you feel like you've kind of reached not the end, but the place that like Big B is going to be my journey for the next 40 years? Or do you feel like you'll be starting other businesses and other divisions? Do you see going bigger than where you're at, or just growing from the standpoint of franchise locations? I don't know if that's a fair question.
I think it's a great question, because it's making me think. So, you know, Big B is going to continue to be Big B, and Big B's awesome. And I love it. Right. My passion is teaching and writing.
Yeah.
And I'm so fortunate. I got asked to be on the faculty here at University of Michigan in the Center for Entrepreneurship, and I'm teaching a class there now. And so much of my passion is involved around trying to bring real value to people. Like real value. Like when you read my stuff, I want it to bring you know, make you think and consider different ideas and so on. And then we're also, Big B is launching something called the Life You Love Laboratory.
Oh, okay.
And it's about purpose-driven organizations. And our purpose is to, as we talked earlier about the organization being a petri dish for personal development.
Yeah.
And that's what the Life You Love Laboratory is. And so what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to, and if I can do one thing for the remaining portion of my career is, and I don't know how to summarize this quickly. The workplace is not a healthy environment for most people. Mm-hmm. The statistics on that are mind boggling. Like 65% of people go to work and are either actively disengaged or disengaged at work. Like
wow.
And I think it even might be more than what I want to do is I want to create and demonstrate and bring curriculum to leaders of organizations who can make their environments healthy for the human being to show up at. And if we can do that, the effects of that are going to be dramatic. The leading killer in the United States is chronic disease. Yeah. The number one contributing factor to chronic disease is stress.
Yeah.
The number one contributor to stress is the workplace.
Mm.
If we can change that, and if we can make that better over the next 40 years, we can contribute to one of the most, you know, the biggest problems we all face. So I mean, I'd have to spend an hour with you alone on that concept to really unfold it.
Yeah.
But that's what we're up to.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do. And so that, I mean, that fires me up. Like, I mean, there's nothing else I want to do. I mean, if I can do that little thing right there and have a nice significant impact, I'm good.
Love that. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back with Mike McFall, we are going to do rapid fire questions. We'll be right back. Hey there, friends, it's Mike, and I am super excited to tell you about a new company I stumbled upon recently. For years now, I have used the typical companies to manage my email newsletters, you know, to update you on episodes of JumbleThink, to give you insights into idea camps. And beyond that, I've used these tools to manage our customers' email newsletter campaigns too. Over the last year and a half, I've been super disappointed by the tools that we typically use. For some reason, they thought they needed their platforms changed, and in doing so, they made them counterintuitive, difficult to use, and really lacking the power I needed to manage my newsletter campaigns well. That's why when I stumbled upon SendInBlue, I was super excited to see how easy it was to move over to their platform, to create an email campaign, and to get the stories of JumbleThink told to you right in your email box. Best of all, they don't just do email campaigns. They can help you with your text message management. They can help you with your Facebook ads and a lot of other really cool tools. Simple and powerful don't usually go together, but with SendInBlue, they do. Best of all, they want to give you 1 month free on their premium plan if you sign up right now. And this is only good for the first 100 JumbleThink listeners who sign up. So head on over to sendinblue.com/JumbleThink. Use the code JumbleThink and get your first month free. I'm super excited to be using them, and I hope you'll check them out. I think you're going to be impressed with what they do, too. So head on over, sendinblue.com/JumbleThink, and use that code JumbleThink to get your first month free.
At Speedway, we've always been here to get you what you need when you need it. We're committed to keeping our stores open, clean, and safe, so you can stay fueled and refreshed all summer long. We've got cold drinks for hot days and frozen drinks for even hotter ones, plus energy boosts, quick bites, and pick-me-ups. We're always on your way, and we're always here for you. So no matter what you need, when you stop by, we'll be ready. Now, any Speedy Freeze up to Mighty Size is just 99 cents.
Right now, switch your family to T-Mobile and get four lines for $25 a line with AutoPay and 5G access included on America's largest 5G network. So don't wait. Get unlimited and nationwide 5G access for the whole family for just $25 a line. Visit a T-Mobile store or T-Mobile.com today.
Plus taxes and fees. Customers may notice lower speeds and further reduction if using over 50 gigs a month due to data prioritization. Video at 480p. Unlimited while on our network. Qualifying credit and 4+ lines required. Capable device required for 5G. Coverage not available in some areas. Some uses may require certain features. See T-Mobile.com.
Now let's jump into rapid fire questions.
Et attendez. Restez calme pendant un
moment. We are back with Mike McFall. Are you ready for rapid fire questions?
I'm a little nervous, but yes.
The first question is, as a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
A professional hockey player.
What's one tip you'd give someone with a big idea or dream and they don't know where to start?
Start.
What is one change you'd like to see in the world?
Love in the workplace. True love in the workplace.
Yeah. What do you want your legacy to be?
To improve workplace culture in America.
Where do you find inspiration?
My mom.
What is one book you think every dreamer should read?
Oh, man. Every dreamer should read Brenda Uhlein, So You Think You Should Write. So You Think You Can Write.
Ah.
I'm not getting that exactly, but it is. I got it from Guy Kawasaki, the guy from Apple.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Nice. I'll put that link into the episode notes so people can find that easily. For you, how do you define success?
I'm trying to develop a unit of measure for love.
Mm.
And I will.
What is one thing, what is one trend you are currently excited about?
Wearing shorts to work.
What is one habit you find helpful in your life?
Sleeping.
I need to do more of that.
Magical.
Yes. What is one thing you wish you would have known when you first started out?
Be patient.
If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what do you think you'd be doing?
I'd be a professor at Harvard University in the Department of Sociology.
Okay. I didn't see that one coming. That's cool. I love it. And finally, what is one dream you are still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
To own the Red Wings.
As we wrap up, we always like to leave our guests have a final thought. If you're talking directly to everyone listening, what would you want to leave them with?
Anything is possible. We have to believe that. I started as a barista, and I am going to own the Red Wings in the end.
Mike, it's been so much fun to have you on. I didn't know who you were before they reached out, but I've become a big fan of your writing, your work, and of the coffee company that you and Bob have built. I truly find you inspirational. So thanks for taking time out and being on the show with us today.
It's my pleasure, Michael. This is great.
Once again, I want to thank today's guest, Mike McFall, for taking time out and being on the show with us today. His links are in the episode notes. Go check out his book and what Big B is doing. We also want to thank our friends over at Send in Blue for sponsoring today's show. If you have email lists, if you send out email newsletters, they are the tool you need to go check out. I'm loving them. I think you will too. And they want to give you 1 month free. All you have to do is head on over to sendinblue.com/JumbleThink. Use that code JumbleThink to get the first month free. But remember, it's only good for the first 100 JumbleThink listeners who sign up. So go do that right now and go check out what they're doing and how they can help you manage your email newsletters. I also want to thank you for tuning into today's show. It means the world to me that you would take time out and listen to what we're creating. Now, here's my takeaway for you today. You know, with Mike's story at Big B Coffee, he started out as a barista, and now he's the CEO of one of the fastest growing coffee franchises in the country. Sometimes our dreams seem big. Sometimes our dreams are unexpected. No matter what they are, though, they are worth chasing. And small beginnings can lead to big things. So whether you think you can or can't do it, I'm here to tell you that your dreams and ideas can become reality. And the things that you can't even imagine might even be possible. So get out there today and chase those dreams, because when you chase them, that's when they happen. Now it's your turn to get out there, dream big, and change the world around you.
Sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille, les enfants, peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant. Dans quelques mois, lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Access and Opportunity, a podcast from Morgan Stanley. Women and entrepreneurs of color traditionally have a hard time accessing capital to start or grow their businesses. Join Vice Chairman Carla Harris as she introduces us to the dynamic investors, entrepreneurs, policymakers, and others working to close the funding gap for these entrepreneurs. Listen and subscribe to Access and Opportunity on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Consumers Energy is modernizing our natural gas infrastructure in Oakland and Macomb counties. Our crews are improving safety, reliability, and efficiency by installing 14 miles of new pipelines, because a stronger infrastructure is better for you and better for Michigan. And remember, when you see our crews, please slow down and go around to keep everyone safe. Consumers Energy, count on us.